Okay, Poppy, start my time. Greg began by saying that the definition of marriage has changed. And I'll suggest to you, not really. It is true, we'll bring this more out in a moment, that things, the regulation of marriage has changed to some extent in the New Testament compared to the Old. For example, back then in Deuteronomy 24, they could put their wife away for uncleanness, but now you can only do it for fornication. I'm just illustrating with that. But in all cases, all the way through from Genesis to now, this has not changed. Marriage has always been male and female. Now I'm going to read to you Genesis 2:24, and you're going to see that Matthew 19:4 through 5 quotes this. Genesis 2:24 says, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Man and a wife, not a man and a man, not a woman and a woman. This is the way it was in the very beginning. And Jesus said the same thing when he quoted this in Matthew 19:4 and 5. Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, come at Adam and Eve, and said, "For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh." There's a lot of different regulations in the New Testament and the Old Testament. But in regards to marriage, from the very beginning, it was man and woman, male and female. And that's what Jesus said here. He said that. He said, this is from the beginning. And he's saying this is going to be part of the New Testament law. So before the Old Testament law from the beginning, during the law of Moses, and now throughout the end until the end of the world, it's always male and female. Yes, some other things may have changed. It's possible. Papa, I believe that polygamy was acceptable under the Old Testament. That was true, but it's not acceptable anymore. Look at 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2. The New Testament says, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. That would mean I should have Carol and nobody else. That's my wife's name. And Carol should have me and nobody else. That's what that means. So there are some things that have changed, but one thing that has never changed, and I'm repeating myself right now, is that marriage is always between male and female. That's been the definition from the beginning. It's never changed. Never. Not in the Old Testament law, not in the beginning, and not now. It's always male and female. Do you see that he's quoting Matthew, Genesis 2:24, and he says, "Have you not read that he that made them at the beginning made them male and female? The man shall leave his wife, a father and mother, shall cleave to his wife." Jesus is saying that's the way it was in the beginning, and that's the way it still is. That's what Jesus is saying. That should be very clear. The definition of marriage has not changed. It's still the same way it was with Adam and Eve. Now it's male and female. He mentioned about polygamy. And I do believe, as I've mentioned to Papa, that polygamy was allowed under the Old Testament, but not today. But guess what? When it was allowed, the man could have more than one what? Ronnie could have more than one what? If it was allowed. Wife. It was always a woman. He can never have the first man or the second man. If he had more than one spouse and he was a man, it was always a wife, a woman. And if there was a second one, it was always a wife, a woman, every time. So the male and female thing did not change even then. Now Greg brought up 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1. And even though I don't think Greg believes that polygamy is allowed today. Do you, Greg? I heard you say that you guys are in favor, though you accept gay marriage, but you're always in favor of monotonous. Excuse me. One. Now, I think Greg... Is that a Freudian slip? No, it's not. Monogamous. He said, 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, the bishops are said to be they should be the husbands of one wife, right? As if Greg says, and he did say, that that means the others could have more than one wife. But you only believe in monogamous marriages, is what you said. So you don't really believe polygamy is for today, right? But you made that argument as if you did. But I don't think his argument will work. This is not saying that the other Christians could have more than one wife. It's not saying that at all. It is just saying that the bishop or the elder must be the husband of one wife. Look down in verse 3. Still giving the qualifications for a bishop. One of the qualifications is not greedy of filthy lucre. Not greedy of dirty money. Now, was the bishop or the elder the only one that had to do that? You mean the other Christians could be guilty of filthy lucre, greedy money? That's not what he's saying. And when he says the bishop must be the husband of one wife, he's not saying others can have more than one wife. Even Greg doesn't believe that. He would make an argument he doesn't even believe. Isn't that something? You make an argument that you don't even believe to try to prove your position. He says, they're not to be greedy of filthy lucre. But we all understand that didn't mean the other Christians could be greedy of filthy lucre. No, as I mentioned in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2 in the New Testament, polygamy is not allowed anymore. To avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. So it's monogamous marriages today. And then let's talk a little bit about Sodom and Gomorrah, even though I didn't bring it up in my first speech. I want you to notice, in Genesis, everybody turn to Genesis 19, and let's see what's going on in this passage. In Genesis 19, verse 4, it says, but before they lay down, the men of the city, the men, even the men of Sodom compassed the house round, both old and young, all the people from every quarter, and they called in the lot and said unto them, where are the women? No, no. I'm trying to do what you do, Tommy, so cleverly, but I can't do it. Where are the men which came into us this night? Bring them out to us that we may know them. So is this talking about homosexuality or not? It's talking about, and Greg's right. I don't think they got them, but they wanted it. They asked to commit sin, sexual sin, men and men. That's homosexuality. It's not men and women. It's men with men. And Greg mentioned about rape. That's true. They wanted to try to rape these men afterwards, but did you notice that the first thing they wanted to do was not rape? They just said, bring out the men so that we may know them. A euphemism for sexual intercourse back then. Men with men. Then Lot said, no. He rebuffed him. Then they thought about taking the men and raping them. So the first thing they asked for was consensual homosexual sex, and it said, no was the answer. No was the answer. So yes, we need to understand this passage, but not ignore the passage. That's what Greg's trying to do. Now turn to Jude verse 7. The New Testament gives us comment here. Jude verse 7. It says, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication. And I forgot to mention that before the angels came there, it turns out they were angels, so the men of the city didn't know that, they were going to be wiped out because they were a sinful city. Well, this tells why. They were giving themselves over to fornication and going after, notice the word underline it, strange flesh. Yes, fornication. What? Strange flesh. You see, it's homosexual. It's homosexuality that they were condemned for. And then Greg brought up Ezekiel 16, 49 and 50. Now it is true, if you want to turn there, Ezekiel 16, 49 and 50, it is true that Sodom and Gomorrah were guilty of inhospitality. Let's read that, 49 and 50. Ezekiel 16. It says, behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. Pride, fullness of bread, they were guilty of all these sins. And abundance of idleness was in her and her daughters, neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. I guess that's where Greg's getting in hospitality. And they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good. You know, people involved in sexual sin, steeped in it, usually are involved in other sins too. That shouldn't surprise us. So they were guilty of inhospitality. But notice what verse 50 says. They were committed abomination. Now we read the passages of Leviticus. What did it call the sin of homosexuality in two cases that we read? In both cases it called it what? Abomination. So what do you think that's talking about in verse 50? It says they committed abomination. They committed homosexuality. The sin of homosexuality. So yes, all these other things they were guilty of, and they were guilty of this abomination, homosexuality. Again, that shouldn't surprise us. People involved in sexual sin are almost always involved in other sins. Now notice verse 58 on that Sodom sister. Thou hast borne thy lewdness and that abomination, saith the Lord. Now look up this word lewdness, genesius. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. He defines this Hebrew word that you see as lewdness, as wickedness, especially used in speaking of sins of uncleanness, such as fornication, rape, or incest. So you see we have the sexual connotation here. You can see it in English, lewdness. to Sodom and Gomorrah were condemned because they were homosexuals. There's no doubt about that. Now, we mentioned about, just a moment ago, about Leviticus telling us what was an abomination, homosexuality. Let's go back to that passage. Because remember, that's in Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 50. It says they were guilty of committing this abomination in addition to the inhospitality. Remember this chart? Leviticus 18:22, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. Neither shalt thou lie with a beast. Remember that? To defile thyself therewith. Neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion. Again, remember I was talking about how that homosexuality by the Old Testament is put in the same category as bestiality, or as I like to call it, to help people understand, bestiality. It's wrong. It's an abomination. That's what Sodom and Gomorrah were guilty of. Among other things, this abomination. We see it. First of all, that's why God wanted to destroy the city, but we see it in their asking, their request to have relations with these other men. The men of the city wanted that. Homosexuality was their sin. And Leviticus 20:13, if a man also lies with mankind, if he lies with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. There's our word again. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. And then one verse later, and if a man lie with a beast, he shall surely be put to death, and ye shall slay the beast. And if a woman approach unto any beast and lie down thereto, thou shalt kill the woman and the beast. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. This demonstrates that Greg's position in this debate is absurd unless you think bestiality, sexual relations as an animal, unless you think that's okay also, because they're condemned right alongside each other. Now, Greg said I was trying to twist what the Bible has to say to come up with this position. Ask yourself honestly, who's trying to twist it? Doesn't it put it pretty clearly right there? How can you misunderstand that? I'm not trying to twist it at all. I'm just trying to read it and point it out to you. It doesn't really take any interpretation whatsoever. Just read the thing. Can't everybody see what that's saying? Do you see any twisting I'm doing by reading that passage? Obviously not. Now let's go to the New Testament. Let's read Romans 1 again. Now tell me if I'm twisting anything. Or I'm just reading to you the passage and asking you to accept it as it reads, without trying to twist it and to get around it. You know, a lot of people want to get around what the Scriptures say on many things because they don't want to practice it. So instead of just admitting they're not practicing it, they'll try to twist the Bible to fit what they're doing. I talk about that in my first speech. Ask yourself, who's twisting the Bible to try to feel justified in what they're practicing? Romans 1. I don't see how you can make it any clearer. Wherefore, God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves. That was verse 24. Now, 26. For this cause, God gave them up to vile affection. Now, whatever we're talking about here involves vile affection. Does everybody know what vile means? For even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. Now, I think that's pretty clear what that is, but if you don't understand what it is, you will when we read the next verse, which talks about the men doing the same thing. They're doing something that is against nature. Crude, but Holger Niebuhr knew what that meant when he said the body parts won't fit. And likewise also the men, verse 27, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another. Sometimes people say, well, these people are just doing this in worship to an idol, and that's the only reason it was condemned. No, they're doing it because they lust and desire one another. They're doing it for the satisfaction, the homosexual satisfaction, perverted as it may be. They left the natural use of the woman, burning their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of the error which was meet. Here are the words that describe homosexuals in this passage. Uncleanness, dishonor, vile, change of the natural use, against nature, leaving the natural use, unseemly, error. I love you, so I'm going to be frank with you. This describes your homosexual practice. And look what God says about it. I didn't say this. I didn't change it. All I did was read it. You can read it right out of Greg's Bible. Not the matter of the King James. You can take his Bible and you'll read the same thing. It's very, very plain. You couldn't make it any plainer if you wanted to condemn homosexuality. It condemns it in the most strongly said terms you can think of. No twisting is needed whatsoever. The only twisting to do is if you want to justify an ungodly practice, again, I love you, if you want to justify an ungodly practice, then you can try to twist the Scriptures. But there's no doubt what they say on this subject. There is no doubt. Now, before I move on from this chart, I want to remind you what I said last time. There are some other passages, other sins mentioned in this chapter, along with homosexuality. We're concentrating on that one sin because that's under dispute tonight. But other sins that are condemned in this same context are fornication, wickedness, murder, deceit, haters of God. Do you think you can be a hater of God and still be saved? A murderer? Commit fornication? Wickedness? Deceit? You see, if you say the homosexuality in this passage is not wrong, then you're forced to say, by logical extension, that these other sins are not wrong also. I think you can see that. That's not a big leap in reasoning to understand that. So here's 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9. And your newer translations, as I said, have these words in them. Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do you see why I'm here? Not because I hate you or want to put you down, because I don't want you to avoid inheriting the kingdom of God. That's what this says. And it tells you about who's going to enter, who's not going to enter the kingdom of God. These unrighteous people. It says, do not be deceived, neither fornicators. A fornicator, one who practices fornication, will not inherit the kingdom of God. Again, if he repents and changes, he will. He can. Idolaters. So if you are committing idolatry, you're going to have to quit to be saved. Adulterers. If a man cheats on his wife, I'm talking about in a heterosexual way, or anyway, in this talking about sexual sins, he's going to be lost unless he repents. Neither homosexuals nor sodomites. The feminine role of the homosexual relationship and the active role. Both are mentioned here. Nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners will inherit the kingdom of God. That's why I'm here. You cannot inherit the kingdom of God. You cannot go to heaven as long as you continue in this sin. And number 6, 1 Timothy 1, verse 10, but we'll start with verse 9. We also know this, that the law was not made for a good man, but for people who are lawless, rebels, ungodly, sinners, unholy, not religious, father killers, mother killers, murderers, sexual sinners. For a moment, let's get the next word in red. Slave traders, liars, and those who break promises. Are these people that are going to go to heaven? It's saying they're not. These and other things are against the healthy teaching as found in the glorious gospel of the blessed God which you trust to me. Simple English New Testament. We skip one. Homosexual. Anybody who continues to practice any of these things, they're all going to be lost. They're going to spend forever in that burning pit. H-E-L-L. Eternal punishment. Homosexuals are in this list. 2 minutes. Notice the translation of the New American Standard. Homosexuals, New King James Version, sodomites, the Living Bible, homosexuals. So 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 10 condemns homosexual activity. And back to that verse in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 11. This is 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9 that condemns homosexuals and sodomites, right? Two verses later, referring to those who have been guilty of homosexuality and other sins, Paul said, and such were some of you. You remember my point? I was making the point on the past tense of the word were, meaning they were homosexuals, or they were fornicators. They were idolaters. If you were something, that means you're not anymore. You quit it. The fact that they quit it means, supposing it's true that if you're born that way, you can't quit it. These people quit it. That proves then you're not born that way. And besides the fact, I was born a heterosexual. By y'all's definition, I think everybody is, but even by your definition. But that doesn't mean I can go out and commit adultery with my wife. I might have that desire, but I have to abstain. Even if you were born that way, which I dispute, you still would have to abstain. There are many things we're born to do, but we have to abstain from. But Romans 1 shows you're not born that way. It says not only is this a sin, it's against nature. Nobody's born that way. You choose that way. And it's a bad way. It's the unscriptural way. It's against God's way. Sin is a transgression of the law. This is a sin because it transgresses God's law. Shown it to you in 6 or 8 places where it's God's law that this is wrong. I asked you to be like these Corinthians and stop practicing homosexuality. I am not being ugly. I love your souls and want to see you in heaven. You can avoid God's judgment for practicing homosexuality by repenting of and quitting this sin. Many others in our day have done it. You can do it too. Because I love you, I encourage you to do that. You can do it. You the only way to go to heaven. Thank you very much.